Hello and welcome to another I almost said rumble. That's not right. Ramble. I'm trying to ramble. Hey, Lucas Kitchen here. Sorry I've been a little bit sick. My voice is a little lower than normal, which is kind of neat. It's a free effect. No plugins here. I have had a number of days of congestion, but now I'm back and bad as always. I have been on a creative journey lately, down memory lane. Is it memory lane or memory row? I think row is like death row. So that would be not memory. I'm releasing this album soon and, just some songs from my life and, songs that are meaningful to me that I've written. And then I thought, like, the day I finished it, I was like, you know what? I got to do the book. I got to write a book about it. And honestly, that was good because a lot of times I have kind of like a depressive dip after I finish a project. And so that allowed me to kind of just go straight into this thing, you know, this other project. And what I decided to do is make a book that tells the story of the album, because I was just thinking, man, I've been sort of dreaming of having a solo album for something like 30 years. You know, I started playing drums when I was 12 and I'm 42. I'm not great at math, but you know, pretty much all that time I was thinking about an album first, kind of like with the bands I was in, but then later, you know, kind of developed into this desire for a solo album. And I thought that's kind of an interesting book. You know, a good story is based on wanting something and striving after it, not getting it. And then, you know, So I started in on this book, and then I thought, well, but it needs illustrations, you know? So then I started digging through old photos, you know, and then I realized like a few of the songs on the album are actually about people that I loved that have died, you know, loved ones that have died, and that's really heavy to write about. I mean, really heavy to write about, you know? So it's been like in a dark corridor for a few days now because it's like, I just reliving. It's weird when you do memoir type stuff, which is technically what this is. It's like you relive it in a way. It's not like necessarily in the way that like a PTSD, you know, sufferer would relive it, but it does have a sense of that. Like, man, I'm back there, you know, I'm living it again. So then I started to think, well, you know, like if I'm making a book, then I should make it into an audiobook. And if it's an audiobook, I should have the music in it. And then I was thinking it's basically like an audio drama. I don't know. It just grew. So that's what I've been working on for the last few days. And I'm telling you, this happens to me every once in a while. I remember hearing about C.S. Lewis would sometimes, his stepson Jack would call it, I'm getting the names mixed up. He was called Jack. His stepson was called, it doesn't matter. His stepson, Grisham. What's that guy's name? Grisham. It doesn't matter. He would sometimes say that C.S. Lewis wrote something in a white hot fury, you know, not like he was angry, but I think that's how he would put it. But it was just like, you know, really, really fast. You know, you just stuck with it and kind of get buried in it. And this book has been that way. It's been a number of days of just waking up, doing it, you know, writing it. A few days of getting up at like, you know, 4:30 or 5, kind of, you know, getting to it for a few hours. And then, I don't know, happens every once in a while. I tried a different approach for writing on this one too, kind of a different thing. I thought, I wonder if it would be faster, because I'm always interested in faster, more efficient. I thought, I wonder if it'd be faster if I actually recorded, like voice recorded, like I'm doing right now, voice recorded the stories that I want in this book and then use AI to clean up the punctuation, basically, like to read through it and just put the punctuation where it needs to be and et cetera, et cetera. And that did speed it up a lot. I mean, I got a 27,000 word book in a few days. And I mean, it was intensive. It was like a lot of recording, you know, kind of pacing around talking about it, but anyway, you know, got something within a few days, which is like a rough draft within a few days is insane. So, I mean, man, the writing industry is changing so much. because there's just so many new tools to help you, you know, kind of be efficient. And I'm noticing something too, that when you produce something really fast, usually, like when you get to the editing phase, it's like you've been working on it for 3 months or 6 months or something. And then you, when you're editing, I mean, when you're ready to edit, you take a break, you kind of let it cool down. And then it's like, you know, now I'm ready because I've invested so much time. What I'm realizing is if you can do it so much faster now, and by the way, I'm not saying that the AI wrote it. I wrote it. I just wrote it with my voice, you know, with my words. And so if you can do it so much faster, by the time you're to the editing phase, it's almost like you haven't invested as much, you know, if you're using this method I'm using. So anyway, but I'm really excited about it. It's got some stories in it that I don't really share. Mostly because they're very painful, but I think they're very important. And there were moments in my life that were just crushing, you know, and some good stuff too, obviously, but we can't eat all candy bars, you know? So that's coming. I don't know when it will be done, but I'm excited about it. I also have another book that I'm doing a rewrite on. I have a book called In Pursuit of Fruit, and the idea was kind of zany in a way. I had this idea of writing a book where it's kind of like part parable, like every other chapter was fiction, and it's a parable for the interspersed chapters that aren't fiction. The non-fiction chapters are like Bible study, you know, and it didn't do well. But I think it might be like the most important and maybe the most original Bible study stuff that I've written. So it's kind of made me, when I say it didn't do well, I mean the folks that have read it have reviewed it well, but it just hasn't been broadly read. And that might have something to do with how we released it. We released it a little different than we've released our others, but I started to think I need a more straight-laced version of that that fits kind of the other books that we're known for. Like the books that we're probably best known for, there's one called, well, actually now the book I'm best known for is Missionary to Mars. And then probably the one that follows that is For the Sake of the King, which are both fiction, Christian fiction. But as far as Bible study stuff, probably our most loyal readers are from Bible study stuff. Books like Salvation and Discipleship, which was based on, you know, originally based on teaching from Bob Bryant at Cypress Valley Bible Church, and then Eternal Rewards, which was not so much based on his teaching, but it was a subject he often talked about, you know. And so in those years when I was being mentored by him, those were books that I worked on then. And those really have connected with people. Probably the next best that's connected is a book called Eternal Life, which is just kind of dealing with salvation questions that, you know, that I had and kind of walking through the Gospel of John. So I thought, man, it'd be cool to take this book that didn't connect, In Pursuit of Fruit. And that's not to say it still can't, but to take it and take out the fiction chapters and write a more straight-laced Bible study kind of book like the others that we have that have been popular, in hopes that it will connect with new readers. Now I'm going to leave the original version available too. But this one I think I'm going to put in our Eternal series. We have a few books that the titles start with Eternal and they're kind of in a series. Eternal Life, Eternal Rewards, Eternal Clarity. And this one might be something like Eternal Mindset or Eternal Perspective or something like that. But it wrestles with the idea of how we have success as disciples, how we have success in the Christian life. And it's not just by, you know, checking a box, you know, having a list of things that we're supposed to do. It's a different approach. And it's something that I hadn't really heard anybody teach, but it's something that, well, I mean, I don't know. It's from the Bible. So I think the Bible teaches it, but it's something that I just think is woefully absent. But anyway, that's also one that I'm working on. So what I'm doing with that one is I'm putting kind of personal, illustrations at the beginning of each chapter. And if you've read any of my Bible study books, you'll know the style. I usually open with a kind of personal illustration and then, you know, kind of give a main, you know, concept and then support it with Bible verses. That's pretty much the point. You know, that's kind of how it works. So I want to get that one done and, let that kind of stand. It's one of those legacy books that I think is important for the sake of helping people in their Christian life. You know, my purpose on this planet is to point people toward Jesus and to make media that does that. That was a simple sentence to say, but it took me years to figure that out. But that's what I think I'm supposed to be doing. That's what I'm here to do. And so that's another one that fits really squarely into that life purpose. You know, I think it points people toward Jesus, helps people be, I'll say, rewardable, you know, helps people be faithful to the Lord. So that's pretty cool. We have a couple of interesting things coming up. I'm going up to Canada in a few weeks to do a weekend Bible conference at a church up there. So that'll be cool. Going to be in a place called Winkler, Canada. And it's in Manitoba. I'm not real clear on what Manitoba is. I think it might be the Canadian equivalent of a state. But I don't really know. But I just know that it's in Winkler and we're going to fly into Winnipeg. So I guess maybe it's somewhat close to that. Also, I'm speaking soon at a church in Burleson, Texas. And so I've been thinking about those things. What are we going to share? And, so I don't know. It's exciting to kind of be out on the road anytime we get to do that. So those are kind of the projects I've been working on. I wanted to talk to you about Halloween though. Halloween. We're coming up on Halloween. And, this came up with our kids recently that, our kids get so excited about what our neighbor does at Halloween. Our neighbor across the street, so they can see him from out their bedroom window, one by one, one item at a time, for like 30 days leading up to Halloween, they put a new thing in their yard, it seems like. And so like every day, pretty much every day of October, our kids have at least one conversation about what new thing went up in the yard, and they watch it. They track it, you know. And that's our neighbor's yard. And there's skeletons and ghouls and goblins and all kinds of scary stuff. And then you look at our yard across the street and there's nothing except a bald spot where the grass won't grow, you know. And, the kids were kind of wondering about that. Like, why are we such boring stick in the muds? And so a couple of data points that have stood out to us recently, my wife and I have talked about this, and maybe I should get her on here, but I'll just speak for her like I normally do, and I'll ask for forgiveness later. I'll probably misquote her, but we have just sort of innately not decorated for Halloween since we've been married. We just never have. And it wasn't until just a few days ago that I really, really, you know, we sat down and we talked through exactly what is it, why is it that we don't decorate for Halloween? And we came up with what I think is a creative idea about Halloween. But in the process of the conversation, we went back and did Halloween research, which is not hard to do. It's common knowledge. It's just, it had been a long time since I had heard it. And so I kind of re-researched, where did Halloween come from and stuff like that. And I thought I'd just kind of remind you, cause you've probably heard it too. It's not like a hidden story or anything, but okay. So let's go back in history around the time of Christ in a different part of the world. The Celts had this ceremony. And this ceremony might have been happening in other places in different forms. Something like it was happening in the indigenous people of South America as well, but not on the same date or anything because their calendar didn't work the same way. But there was a date, and it was the end of October. And what they believed about it There's a name for it. I can't remember the name. I'm not going to look it up. You can look it up if you want, but it's a different name for it. In old Celtic, I guess. Or is it Celtish? I think it'd be Celtic. In old Celtic. And it was a day when they believed that kind of the veil, like the wall between the place of the dead and the place of the living, kind of gets soft or blurry or, I don't know, non-existent. And so they believed that the spirits of the dead would be wandering around on that day. And they would dress up, they would disguise themselves to not be recognized by the spirits of the dead. Now, I don't know about you, but that sounds pretty uncomfortable to me. I'm a Westerner, I'm a Christian, I don't know, that doesn't sound... So I read that and I was like, okay, but I'm remembering that the church kind of absorbed, like the Catholic Church kind of absorbed that holiday and did something with it. So I went to read about that. And what I realized is, no, wait a minute. The church just created a different holiday that sat on the same date, but it wasn't the same thing. I just had gotten these all kind of mixed up in my mind. It wasn't the same day. They had All Saints Day and then All Souls Day. And there's a little bit of a similarity, but it was a day, All Saints Day, I think, was a day to celebrate saints and martyrs. And All Souls Day was a day to remember those who, you know, loved ones who had died, I think. And so it's kind of like, well, that's real different, you know, to celebrate saints and martyrs and to remember ancestors, you know, and not worship them, at least not originally, but to just remember them, you know. And so the belief is that, sorry, still a little sick here. The belief is that, not the belief, sorry, I lost my train of thought. If I'm being completely honest, I was biting my finger. I have this habit where I bite my finger and I had a little hangnail sort of thing. I don't know why I was trying to pretend like that wasn't the case. You know, that's just what was happening. And the habit is so strong that sometimes it gets me in the middle of a sentence, even the middle of a recording. What is wrong with me? I don't know. I probably need to see a therapist. Anyway, hopefully it's entertaining. Maybe that's of value. Okay, so All Saints Day, All Souls Day. It seems that the earlier church, the Catholic Church, placed those holidays on the same day, because they come the same day, October 31st, November 1st. One is All Saints, the other is All Souls. I think All Souls is November 1st, which is also the date of the Day of the Dead, which you see in Spanish lineage culture. The Catholic Church through the Spanish colonies sort of spread that. And that sort of conglomerated various indigenous people, religious holidays that kind of were associated with ancestor worship and ancestor help seeking, stuff like that. Okay, so where are we? So here we are in modern history. And I'm asking myself, and I'm having this conversation with my wife and kind of trying to think through all this. And I realized I had the wrong perception of Halloween and its relation to All Saints Day and All Souls Day. And so All Saints Day and All Souls Day within themselves would probably be just, I mean, I think they'd be okay. I'm not real familiar on what like the Catholics do for that or the Orthodox do for that, but like it's probably okay to like just tell some stories about some saints and martyrs as long as you're not worshiping them. That's where I draw the line. You know, we don't worship them. We don't pray to them. I don't. I hope that you don't either. So, you know, carve that stuff out of there, but leave some respect for some saints and martyrs and, some memory of, you know, those who have gone before, probably okay as long as you don't have the the worship aspect or the praying to them. And I had thought that Halloween was basically that, somehow associated with that. But as I was reading, I realized, no, that those were created to try to kind of supplant, to try to replace this earlier thing, which is a lot more like Halloween. And so honestly, our Halloween is much more like, in the actual practice of it, it's much more like the old Celtic ceremony, right? The dress up, disguise yourself from evil spirits. And as we were talking about this, I started to put my finger on the thing that bothers me about the whole deal, about Halloween. Now, we still let our kids dress up. I mean, we have so far, and I think we will this year too. We're not against playing dress up. We have an entire bucket of dress up stuff, and they play dress up all the time. And, you know, as far as they're concerned, this is just a day where it's like cool to dress up, you know? And what occurred to me as we were talking about this, or occurred to my wife, I can't remember. We have one brain, and it just, hers is the better half, you know, so I get to take credit when she has a thought. It might have been her thought, might have been mine, I don't remember. But what occurred to me is kind of this question of what is being celebrated? So if we were doing All Saints Day, but not like the old Catholic version, but like a version, like an evangelical version of, you know, or maybe I should say like I grew up in a Bible church, like a Baptist version or a Bible church version of All Saints Day. What we might would do is read a couple of things from the Voice of the Martyrs book and, you know, talk about those that have gone before. And I don't know. I mean, we keep it non-worshipy, you know. But modern Halloween is just not that. Modern Halloween seems to celebrate something different. So that version of All Saints Day would be like we're going to celebrate those that were faithful to the Lord. That would be an All Saints, that'd be like a evangelicalized All Saints Day. But what Halloween is actually celebrating something different. And I'm not judging by the history of it. I'm just judging by the stuff that people put up in their yards. Like the things I see in people's yards are celebrating the spooky, you know, celebrating the frightful, celebrating the dead, celebrating just the stuff that I just don't want to celebrate, you know. And I think that was the phrase that helped me to kind of grasp what is my problem with this thing. It's what do you want to celebrate? Do you want to celebrate the power of the forces of darkness? I know that sounds really heavy-handed. And I'm not saying that everybody that puts up Halloween stuff in their yard is celebrating the powers of the forces of darkness. But some of the people that put things up seem to be celebrating that by what they put up. And so I started to think, what if we turned it on its head? What if we said, we're going to celebrate the opposite? And I started to think, like, the Bible is full of these scenes where the forces of darkness meet God's power. And God's power just stomps it, you know? And so we started thinking, like, what if to decorate for Halloween, we had a scene in our front yard of Elijah and the prophets of Baal and fire falling from heaven? I mean, is that not God's power just dominating the forces of darkness, you know? Or like the scene of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, totally, you know, has a demonic twist to it. They're supposed to bow down to this pagan idol and then they don't, and God's power just overcomes. I think my favorite though, it's like that story. Remember that story where the Ark of the Covenant, is it the Philistines, I think? They have the Ark of the Covenant and they bring it into the Temple of Dagon, which is a pagan god. And, the statue of Dagon falls over on its face in front of the Ark of the Covenant. So they set it back up and the next day it falls over and its hands and its head break off or something like that. I thought, now that'd be a cool scene in the front yard because it communicates something exactly opposite. It's like, we're not celebrating the forces of darkness. We're not celebrating death. We're not celebrating this thing which hath been wrought by the sin and darkness in this world. We're celebrating that God's power does dominate that darkness. And that's something that could be cool to me. I also just thought it'd be cool to do a scene of Jonah being swallowed by the whale. You know, like Krista had the idea of like the whole porch is like a whale's mouth, you know. And by the way, I don't think we're going to do any of this, at least not this year. But it's a neat idea to like take something and rather than just saying we don't do it, to say, no, we're not going to just be the negative space. We're going to make positive space. You know, we're not just going to be absent. We are going to speak into this thing, you know. And I really like that. I think there's a propensity for us to just kind of isolate and to get off on our own. And that's fine. I know we need to do that sometimes, but that also subtracts our voice from the narrative. You know, it subtracts our voice from the darkness in the world, you know? And so like, I want to celebrate, like if I'm asking myself, what do I want to decorate my yard with? And what do I want to celebrate? I want to celebrate the power of God, you know, stomping all over the minuscule power of Satan. Now, Satan has more power than me in my flesh, obviously, but not than God. I mean, that's the narrative of the Bible over and over, you know, and maybe the culmination of this yard art would be the tomb, you know, the resurrection. Wouldn't that be cool to like reclaim Halloween for, God's power dominating Satan, you know, and reminding like, let's just say for the sake of argument, which I think is silly, but let's say for the sake of argument that there are a higher number of evil spirits out on that night or that day or whatever. Well, what message do we want to send? This message I'd want to send is, hey, remember when God beat you all these times, you know? I'm not trying to disrespect. I'm just like, I don't know. It just seems like that's more the message that I want to remind people of. Krista was telling me about this video she watched of somebody that was, they were in the Church of Satan. They were a Satanist. That sounds like a joke, but that is a thing, you know, they were in the Church of Satan. And, their take on it was if you put these emblems, these symbols in your yard, it opens you up to, you know, the forces of darkness. I don't know what that means. I mean, I don't even know what that would include, you know, but there does seem to be certain behavioral patterns. Sorry for my chair being so squeaky. Was that spooky? Maybe that was spooky. Ooh. There does seem to be behavioral patterns that if someone's an unbeliever, at least it signals that there's an openness to, you know, a demonic influence. Witchcraft, just doing witchcraft obviously is one of those. For people that mix like witchcraft and drug use, the drug use then is part of that. And there's a number of things like that, but this person was saying that in their experience in the Church of Satan, they said that's the case for them, you know, that putting Halloween decorations up would open them up. Now, I don't know if you could transfer, because that's a person who was in the Church of Satan, right? So I don't know if that transfers to everybody. I really just don't know, but whatever it is, that's not the reason we don't put stuff up. We just heard that just recently. The reason we don't put stuff up is I don't want to celebrate that, you know? We also don't put up like a nativity scene, but we would. Like we're not against that. It's just like, we just don't. So what the neighbors might see is that like we don't do much of anything, but we have different reasons for not doing each of them. You know, we do Christmas lights and stuff like that, but. So anyway, that's some thoughts on Halloween. I'd be interested to know what you guys do. And by the way, I don't judge anybody that does something different. I went and saw my friend who's a Jehovah's Witness. And Jehovah's Witness they don't do holidays at all. The only holidays that they'll do, they're not holidays exactly, but is anniversaries, which is an interesting twist. So they don't do holidays of any kind. And honestly, the reason they don't, the reason they give is, that basically the thing I was talking about, how the church at some point, the Catholic Church, took a number of pagan holidays and placed our Christian holidays on top of those dates. And here's what I was thinking about it is like, that sounds like, oh, they're just trying to mix those holidays. I don't think so. I think, and I don't know, because I'm not a historian on this. It just makes sense to me that the church was probably trying to replace those holidays with something healthy and something Christ-like. And I would guess that the mixing, the syncretism probably came from the practitioners, not from the, you know, the papacy or whatever. I doubt that, you know, there have been some rotten popes, obviously, but I doubt that even a pope would look at like the Celtic practice and say, oh yeah, let's get us some of that. I don't think so. I think what they probably said is, this is not Christ-like. Let's replace it with something. And I think in the long run, maybe that was a mistake, but I don't know. You know, I mean, what, they could have just picked a different day, but they didn't. So I see it as kind of a non-issue on most holidays, because to me, I don't care what date we, you know, remember Christ's birth or whatever. The date just doesn't matter to me. I was thinking like, pick any murderer in the history of the world and they murdered somebody on a specific date, but we don't mark that date off the calendar and say, oh, we can't do anything special on this day because it's ruined by, there's only 365 days in a year. So it's like some things just have to be on top of other things, you know? So I'm, as you can tell, I'm not too concerned about it. It's just Halloween in general. No, I'm sorry. Halloween specifically, it gives me, it kind of triggers my conscience a little bit, but I don't judge anybody that feels different about it. To me, it falls into the category of, meat sacrifice to idols. You know, I think if somebody has fun on Halloween with Halloween decorations and they do that in good conscience, I think they're okay. There's no specific verse for that, you know? So I think we're all good. I just for us, it's kind of where we land. And it may be because we're the weaker brother and sister. Maybe we're not as, but I've never enjoyed like witchcraft entertainment, like TV shows or movies where there's witchcraft, with the exception of Harry Potter. I'll probably need to wrestle with that a little bit, but like witchcraft in the real world, I think the difference with Harry Potter is like the author constructed such a different world. Like if you think about Harry Potter, the witchcraft that is happening is kind of in almost a world of its own, and it's apart from the non-witchcraft world. And it's sort of like I'm a little unclear on, for the muggles in Harry Potter, whether they can do magic and they just have to try real hard, or it seems a little hazy to me, and I've read the books, but I can't remember. But it's because of that, it kind of separates it from the normal world. In reality, witchcraft can be a temptation for anybody in the real world, you know? And so that's, I think, probably why I set it apart. I would think about like Narnia. There's magic in Narnia. But because it's supposedly in a different world, it's kind of like it's okay. So, you know, it seems okay. There's probably other examples, but barring those and maybe a handful of others, I generally don't like witchcraft entertainment. It's like why, like I've liked the the Marvel movies, but like when we got to Doctor Strange and Wanda, whatever. What is her? Well, I can't think of it, but she's Scarlet Witch. We kind of broke off watching that branch of the Marvel movies because it's like, it's real witchcrafty. I don't like that. It, you know, because like, it's a fine line to make fiction with magic and it not be satanic, you know? And pretty often it kind of leans, you know, it kind of leans toward that. I'll tell you one that was just, oh, I can't remember the name of it, but it was one with Jack Black in it. And, it was kind of a witchcrafty kind of thing. And it had a very kind of like satanic sort of a deal in it. It's like, oh, this is, I couldn't stand it. It was, and I love Jack Black as far as his talent and his acting and his music, but it's just like, just not good for me. So anything that celebrates the darkness, you know, I'm just that kind of triggers my conscience for some reason. Not for some reason. I mean, think for obvious reason, but for some other people, you know, maybe it doesn't. Now this is interesting because when Peter Franzen was on, we talked about horror as a genre. And I mentioned to him that I've never really gotten into horror. And I think that's why if I have a hint that horror is celebrating like the power of darkness, I just can't get into it. But there is horror that doesn't do that. And I'm not promoting horror. If nobody ever watches horror, it's fine with me. Actually, that I'd be maybe more than fine. That'd be great. But there is horror that there's even, and there's, it's not a huge genre, but there is actually Christian horror, which is really kind of an interesting concept. So anyway, Halloween and horror, not really my thing. But just trying to think of how to reclaim it, you know, how to claim it for Christ in a way that isn't, I don't know, overbearing and cheesy, you know, but is artistic and interesting. And so maybe next year we'll prepare some yard art with those, you know, those scenes. So that's that. Hey, I'm doing this out of order, but why don't we look at the verse of the day? Let's see. Where is it? Okay. Here it comes. Here it comes. Here it comes. Verse of the day is James 5:13. It says this. Is anyone among you suffering? Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, pretty much any group in the world of more than one person, somebody's going to be suffering, it seems like. It says, is anyone among you suffering, let him pray. I'm sorry, I'm about to sneeze. I'm suffering a little bit, but not too bad. Is anyone among you suffering? Let him pray. Is anyone cheerful? Let him sing psalms. Sorry, my voice cut out on the last there. That wasn't a dramatic whisper. My voice just actually cut out. Let me read it again. Is anyone among you suffering? Let him pray. Is anyone cheerful? Let him sing psalms. That's pretty cool. Huh, it's like, it's kind of interesting. It's like, if you're having a certain mood, lean into that. You know, if you're leaning a certain way, your options are, if you're suffering, pray. So that should be the response to suffering. If you're suffering, my response usually is to get mad and cuss and scream and yell at the kids and whatever. But that's not the right response. The right response is, if you're suffering, pray. Man, I need a t-shirt or a, actually, if I could have that tattooed on the back of my eyelid in reverse in glowing phosphorus so that every time I close my eyes, it says, if you're suffering, pray. I think that would, well, it'd probably result in cancer. The eyeball thing is, that's kind of a joke, but like if I could somehow remember that every time I'm suffering, and I think maybe we could include emotional suffering. Suffering is a strong word. Maybe even just like discomfort. You know, or I was thinking today, I was taking a walk and was thinking, why do I have this feeling so often that something bad is just around the corner? It's like, I don't want to live with that. I need to pray about it. That's a type of suffering, you know? It's like an emotional suffering. So I don't know. And then the second part, what did it say? If anybody's joyful, is it joyful? Or let me open it again. Cheerful. Is anyone cheerful? Let him sing psalms. Ooh, okay, so here's what I'm thinking. Is the cheerful person, okay, so the person who's suffering isn't told to sing psalms. Because maybe that would be false for them to try to be, pretend to be cheerful. But the cheerful person should sing psalms. Now, what happens if you sing? Other people hear it. And so if you stay in community with other believers and you follow these verses, what you'll wind up with is the people that are suffering are praying, and the people that aren't suffering, the people that are cheerful, are bringing hope and cheer to the ones who are suffering just because they are singing out their joy and cheerfulness. It's kind of cool. I don't know that I've ever read that. Well, I mean, I've read through James, but I've never focused on that verse. That's a good one. Way to go, verse of the day, you version. I wonder how they pick those. I wonder how they pick what verse they're going to do. I don't know. Okay, I think I'm at the bottom of the well, and I'm going to have to blow my nose soon, and I don't want to do that on air. So, got lots of interesting things coming out soon, so I'll keep talking about them, and we'll make it happen. Hey, I tell you what would be cool. Let me finish with this. I want to occasionally talk to people on this podcast like I did with Peter Franzen. The types of people that I would like to interview are missionaries with an interesting story. And every missionary has an interesting story. I would like to interview people who are creatives, who are making media that point people to Jesus. There's lots of those out there. I would like to talk to people that just want to talk. I think that could be interesting. You know, just people. So you're thinking like, oh, two really specific ones and then one so broad that anybody could fall into that category. That's kind of the point. Is like, I do want to talk to those first two groups, obviously, but like really, it'd be cool to just connect and have people hear our conversations. So, if you know somebody, another group is Christian musicians. I think it'd be cool to talk to Christian musicians, which is a creative, but it's a subset of creative. That would be interesting. Oh, and also a farmer from Virginia. I think it'd be fun to talk to them, or maybe like a financial VP from Florida, or, maybe like a, I can't remember what Carl does in Colorado. Carl, what do you do? I'm not going to go through all the occupations of my friends who I think might be listening. Anyway, I want to talk to folks. I'll probably still do most of my rambles just me because it's easy to do and I can slide it into the schedule whenever I want, but I want to get better about talking to some folks. So if you guys have some ideas of folks that would be good to talk to, zap me a message. And if you don't know how to message me, a pretty direct way is to go to lucaskitchen.com. It's just a sub page of our ministry, which is freegrace.in, but I'm thinking you might be more likely to remember lucaskitchen.com. Down on the bottom of that page, there's a contact form that you can zap to me, and just let me know what you're thinking. So, all right, you guys, I am so glad that you hung out with us and, hope to talk to you soon.